This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yerkew and Peter Scoop Stanton. This is the radio show that will break your neck if your neck needs breaking. And here are the hosts of 7-5 Radio, Walter Yerkew, star of the biggest documentary movie ever made, The 7-5, and Peter Scoop Stanton, who starred in To Catch a Predator.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 7-5 Radio. I am Peter Scoop Stanton with Walter Yerkew. Walt, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I'm right here. Right
here. How are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing okay. We had a busy week this week and getting ready for the weekend. I mean, I just can't wait for the Saturday, Sunday to come. It's going to be fun. I like my Saturdays and Sundays.
Yes, we all do. But anyways, Walt, we have a very special guest on the line. But first, let's get down to first order business. We remember Deputy U.S. Marshal Chase S. White, end of watch, November 29th, 2018. His killer has been arrested. He's still breathing. Also, Police Officer David Romwell of the South Salt Lake, Utah Police Department, end of watch, November 24th, 2018. His killer was fortunately shot and killed. And remember, Police Officer Samuel Jimenez of the Chicago, Illinois Police Department, his end of watch, November 19th, 2018. Officer Jimenez was involved in the incident at Mercy Hospital. The person that shot him was also shot and killed by Chicago's finest. But anyways, let's get to our first guest. Back in February, March time frame, I was at CPAC, and I saw a gentleman sitting down in the lobby area minding his own business. I said, this guy looks familiar. I think he was on Fox News. So I did a quick reference, and sure enough, it was Gary Byrne. I walked up to Gary, introduced myself. He was more than pleasant, and we got to talking, and he gave me an autographed copy of his book. Now, me being shorthanded had nothing to offer except Jim Lancia's book, Downtown White Police, which unfortunately I had no copies of. So I called Jim, who was on his sabbatical down in Florida. I said, Jim, I need a copy of your book. He's like, man, I'm down in Florida. I don't have any books. So I had to go on Amazon and send one to Mr. Byrne. But anyways, a little bit about Mr. Byrne. He is an Air Force veteran. He was a member of the United States Secret Service Uniform Division, and he was a part of the Federal Air Marshal Service of the Department of Homeland Security. He's also a writer of a number one New York Times bestselling book, Crisis of Character. And this year he came out with a new book, Secrets of the Secret Service. Gary, how are we doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. Gary, you got quite a story. Tell us a little bit more about yourself that I didn't mention that you want our listeners to know about you.
Sure. I retired in 2016, and my unfortunate claim to fame is, which really brought me to write my first book, Crisis of Character, is I was the first employee of the U.S. Secret Service who was ever compelled to testify against the same president. I had to testify against President Clinton in his impeachment scandal that involved the intern, Monica Lewinsky.
Wow. Now, first question I have for you, Gary, is why haven't you been a victim of Arkansas suicide?
Yeah, the one-car Arkansas suicide. So, you know, the truth is I was off the radar until my book came out. And then once the book came out, at that point, I said, if I so much as, stub my toe, people are going to blame the Clintons. Because, you know, when my book first came out, mainstream media kind of blacklisted me. But Fox News and certain hosts, engaged me. They gave me a chance to voice my story and gave people a chance to challenge me and see that it was true. And like Sean Hannity and other members of Fox and many radio shows like yourselves. I mean, the radio show I'm doing with you today could easily be over my 400th radio show since the book came out, the first book came out. So, and I've made no secret that I'm a big fan of the Second Amendment, and I've been protect using my skills to protect people for 29 years, and I use them to protect myself and my family. So, you know, it is what it is, and life goes on.
Well, this is Gary. I appreciate your service. I really do.
And Thank you so much.
I'm fascinated by, you know, your experiences and such like that. And Scoop has got, like, gaga over you the past couple of weeks that we've been talking.
Thank you.
And you know, I've read up about you, and I've looked at some of your stuff. And, again, it's just fascinating. And all of America appreciates your service.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Go right. ahead.
Now, Gary.
You're the fella that is beside himself about having Gary on a show. So go ahead and shoot some questions at him, and I'll chime in when I can.
Thank you, Walter. Gary, you started with the Secret Service under George H.W. Bush, who recently passed away. Would you care to share some of your stories and memories about former President Bush?
I would love to. I mean, he was so kind and so, you know, if I had to describe him in one word, I'd say he was, you know, almost stoic. You know, when I first started working for them, it was the summer of 91. And, you know, Washington, D.C. is very hot. And, the one thing I want your listeners to understand about George H.W. Bush was when people say that he understood the common man or how nice he was to everybody, I mean, that's no exaggeration, and that's not political PR. That is really the way this guy was. Just to tell you a real quick story, that the first summer I'm there, and I'm standing post, you know, on the south side of the White House. If you look at the south side of the White House, that's the side where the Washington Monument is. And if you look at the Truman Balcony and right underneath there's a door, that's a Secret Service post, and I was standing my post. And all of a sudden, I knew that the first family was over by the pool, and they were having a cookout. And I look up, and here comes a houseman, one of the men that works, you know, that's like a butler at the White House, with this huge tray of hamburgers, hot dogs, sausages, and the president, and President Bush, next to him, and they walk up to me, and he says, take what you want. They set the tray down. Take what you want and pass it to the other officers. And I was brand new, and I looked at the president. I go, oh, we're not allowed to eat on post. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And the houseman looked at me like I was crazy. But I took the tray, and I put it on this shelf in this doorway. And then I contacted the other guys that were surrounding me, you know, on the grounds. And I took what I wanted, and I passed the tray to them. Then the houseman came out with this big silver, another silver tray with glasses of water for us. And we basically, you know, stood our post and had this great meal. Because George Herbert Walker Bush cooked it for us. And when he ate, everybody ate. And it was something I'll never forget.
Wow. Now, when Mr. Bush left the White House, and we'll come to our first commercial, we're going to transfer from Bush to the Clintons. Let's see what it was like to work the White House going from one fine man to the Clintons. Stand by. We got some great commercials. We got Gary Byrne on our show. This is 7-5 Radio on Liberty News Radio. Gary, stick around.
Thanks.
Isn't this great? Just the two of us. No work, no interruptions, no phone, no TV. Finally, we have a chance to just talk. I mean, how long has it been? Well, first of all, we should talk about your schedule. There are a few things that could use some adjusting, but overall, I think it's going all right. Basically, I think we're doing a pretty good job of communicating, which is good. You're doing a really good job of letting me know how you feel about things. I want to keep the lines open, if you know what I mean.
Jerry? It's 4:00 in the morning. What are you doing?
Oh, I was just giving Emily a bottle.
Who are you talking to?
Emily.
She's only 3 weeks old, and she's asleep.
I know. I was just practicing.
Family, isn't it about time?
Isn't this great? Just the three of us. No work, no interruptions, no phone.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
As you all know,
Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
You're back, and Scoop is just getting back from posting insults on Twitter. This is still 7-5 Radio.
And we're back on 7-5 Radio, but I was not posting insults on Twitter for once. I was actually posting that Gary Byrne is on 7-5 Radio. But Gary, in 1993, Bill Clinton and Mrs. Clinton came to the White House. What was the mood of the Secret Service Uniform Division when Bush left and the Clintons came in?
Well, it was a little bit of a culture shock. You know, a lot of my fellow officers had been protecting the Bushes for 12 years because he was vice president for 8 years. And some of the guys I worked with at the White House actually transferred from the vice president's residence to the White House to basically keep protecting them. So they were you know, sad to see them leave. But I was sad to see them leave, and I didn't realize how sad it was going to be until, you know, the Clintons got there. And I mean, I had, you know, high hopes. You always, you know, they weren't my kind of politics, but you always look at it this way. When you're in the Secret Service, you know, there's a couple little cliche mottos, you know, the Americans protect, elect them and we protect them. And so I had high hopes. You know, half the country basically wanted them in office, and they won. And so, and things started off in the first couple of weeks pretty good, and then they just kind of circled the bowl. So, and it went on from there. Just, you know, it was, I forget exactly what the first scandal was. I guess it was Troopergate or something like that. And then it just went from one scandal to the next.
Wow. So, what was it like protecting Mrs. Clinton?
At first it was okay. She seemed to be a decent person at first. And then after a couple weeks, I think the first thing that she tried to do that failed, was like healthcare. They tried to do a version of socialized healthcare and it failed. And a little before that failed, like you started seeing who the real Hillary Clinton was. This kind of distant, cold person. It was comical to protect her because she walked around, like, you got to remember, she was just the first lady. She wasn't an elected official. She was just the first lady. And then the president gave her all this responsibility. They actually gave her an office because she was a lawyer. They gave her an office in the West Wing, in the legal counsel's office area, which was unusual. And she had no real job, but she walked around like she was the king of Siam. And, you know, it was, it started, at first it was a little unnerving, And then, you know, you just have to focus on the job, which is protection. Whether you like them or not, you protect them. And but it became comical. I talk about it in the first book, and I think a little bit in the second book, about, you know, her berating me one time, you know, standing there yelling and screaming at me. And, you know, I'm 6'2" and I go about 250 at the time. And she's, you know, a little over 5 feet tall. And it was so comical that I literally laughed in her face. And, of course, that made her angrier. And so it was just a bizarre situation.
You know, just to jump in here, you know,
yeah.
what you said about Bill giving Hillary her own office and you know, a whole bunch of not a lot to do things. It's pretty much what Obama did to her. I think Obama and Bill, you know, chatted and asked, Obama asked Bill, you know, how can I get rid of her and still have her around? And he said, there's a lot of stuff to do. And she was all around the world, you know, doing the email thing. And he was always out of Obama's hair. So,
yeah.
You know, you kind of bring up
a good point, too, with a little twist to that is, everything that she ever did, she failed at. That's what people want to refuse to believe. You have to go back to the early 1970s, President Nixon, during the Watergate scandal. The Democrats are investigating Richard Nixon in the Watergate scandal. And I don't want to get caught up in that, but one of the things that you have to know about her is she was hired as a young lawyer to investigate Richard Nixon. The lead Democrat that hired her fired her because he found her dishonest and that she was trying to lie and manipulate what happened. So that's very significant. Now, if you go on, you know, the Democratic Party and liberals have these modern day electronic things where, you know, you can go on Snopes and some of these websites that are supposed to be the truth, and they're not. And they'll tell you that wasn't true, and even the Clinton campaign tried to deny it. But I was alive at the time. I, you know, in 73, I was 11, 12 years old. I remember everything that happened. And you can still go on and research, you know, Hillary Clinton. And there's a story about her. She gets fired from that investigation, then eventually meets Bill Clinton. And, you know, she's at this Rose Law Firm where, you know, one year they give her the lawyer of the year in Arkansas. And when one of her staff members was bragging to me one day that Mrs. Clinton, they actually called her Hillary Rodham Clinton. That's why I always refer to her as HRC, said that she was lawyer of the year. And I said, well, what did she do? And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, she must have won some big case. Well, no, she was just lawyer of the year. I'm like, so she does nothing. And that's really what happened. Everything she's ever touched turns to crap. And she proved that as Secretary of State.
Wow. Now, as a member of the Secret Service Uniform Division, if you were assigned or the as a special agent, were you, if one was assigned to protect HRC, was that a form of punishment among the agency?
It was. It didn't start out like that because usually, like the agents, there's a lot of agents on the family detail. And then you've got agents that are on the president's detail. Sometimes they're on the first lady's detail, but they usually stay with the president's detail. And then if they have children, like these guys had one child, so she had a detail. But it's all referred to as the first family detail. Now, where the uniform division guys are all assigned to the White House. And they do travel with them, like to do the metal detectors and the counter sniper, but we're all posted at the White House. And the agents that were assigned to the first lady's detail, It did become a form of punishment. Our you know, the management of the Secret Service has a lot of issues. The individual people are good people, and they're trying to do a hard job. But the management system of the Secret Service is a little vindictive. It's a little passive-aggressive. And they did start, when the real Hillary Clinton came out, they did start telling guys, look, if you don't, you know, do this for us, we'll just transfer the first lady's detail. We'll see how happy you are there. And it became a running joke, but it was true. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the longer they were there, the crazier she got. Her behavior was incredible.
Wow. Now, Gary, you were a uniform officer of the United States Secret Service. Please tell our listeners the difference between a Secret Service special agent and a Secret Service uniform division officer.
Sure. So the agents they're referred to inside the government as 1811. That's the pay code, how they get paid. The Secret Service agents are also federal investigators. They investigate. They investigate threats against the president, counterfeiting money. They also do credit card fraud, cell phone fraud, and they also are now involved in investigations into human trafficking and some other things. And they could be assigned investigations during special purposes. The Unifor Division, what I did, are regular federal police officers. They actually have the most authority of any federal police agency because they can enforce the law anywhere the U.S. flag flies and arrest people without warrants, you know, just on sight of what happened, as opposed to being a special agent. Most of the times when you're arresting somebody, you have to go to a judge and tell them what they did, where police officers, like the regular police officers where most people live, you know, they see something, they can investigate it, and then they make the arrest. The Uniform Division also does all the fixed posts around the outside of the White House, inside the White House, the vice president's residence. They do the emergency response teams for the White House and the vice president's residence. They do the counter sniper. They do all the metal detectors. And they also do a crime scene investigation vehicle in Washington, D.C.
Wow. You guys are real cops. Well, we're coming on to our second break. We have Gary Byrne on the line. This is 75 Radio on Liberty News Radio. Stick around, everybody.
Your daily Liberty News Wire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosherified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
you're still listening, here's more 7-5 Radio.
And we're back with Gary Byrne. Quick note about the first commercial, the Kosherify app. It's very misleading. People think, oh, it's for people who don't want to eat kosher. Well, guess what? I did some research. It's those who do want to eat kosher and need to eat kosher and those who don't. So it's a personal choice. So check them out. Do your research. But anyways, we got Gary Byrne still on the horn. Gary, you came out with Crisis of Character, and you gave me a book out of the goodness of your heart, and you autographed it. And believe it or not, my son tried to learn how to read on your book, but I read it very quickly. What was the reaction of when the book first came out? Did people say, don't bring out the book? Book's great. We need something like this. Or I'm going to get you. Or make sure your life insurance is up to date.
Yeah, all of the above, actually. So I knew when you know, I never, ever, ever thought I would write a book. My co-writer, Grant Schmidt, he's 27 now. I think he was 24 when he came to me and asked me to write my life story. And him and his parents were all friends. I've known them for about 20 years. And Grant had just graduated from the Temple Film School a couple of years before. He had a small film company. He needed a new project, and he wanted to, you know, write my life story. And I told him I appreciated the gesture, but they didn't understand what they were asking, and I wasn't comfortable doing it. So, but they're very good friends, and they were persistent. So I said, listen, I was still flying as an air marshal. And I said, you know, I'll tell you what I'll do. Grant and I will work on this for 4 months. And after 4 months, I'm going to stop. And by that time, you should understand, with a little bit of research, you realize what you're asking me to do. And you know, I wasn't even sure if legally I could write what I wanted to write. And it really started out to be more about my life. The original title was called Fence Jumpers to Hijackers. And the book was actually, by the time we got to the publisher, it was twice as big as they wanted. It was 156,000 words. We had to cut it down to 80,000 words. And of course, they were interested in the stuff that revolved around the Clintons and the impeachment, which I understood. That's marketing, and I get all that. I knew when I finally, after 2 months of working on it, we had three working chapters, and a working forward. And I completely flipped the other way. One day on a flight back from, I think it was Spain, as an air marshal, I was contemplating doing it, and I was looking at the notes that we had made. I was, you know, working on my computer a little bit, and all of a sudden, like, it came to me. I'm like, if anybody could tell the story of who this person really is, it's me. Because of their behavior, I got subpoenaed 6 times. Because of their behavior, the Clintons' behavior, the Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist ordered me to testify or go to jail. I can tell the story that nobody else can, because you can call me a liar, but it's not true. You know, everything that, if what I say isn't true, why was I subpoenaed? Why was I ordered to testify? Why, you know what I mean? Like, it's out there. And if anybody could tell the story and get it out there, and the truth out there, would be me. And I completely flipped the other way. I brought it to my wife, who was absolutely said no, that it was crazy. She read it and she flipped too. And we did it. You know, we went forward with it. I knew that people in the Secret Service would not be happy. I knew some of my friends that I was still friends with, because I told nobody. I wanted everybody that I had worked with, or anybody that was still working, to have complete deniability. I had no idea that crazy SOB was doing it, you know, so, because I know how vindictive the Clintons are, and I know how vindictive Homeland Security can be to its employees. So that's pretty much the way it went.
Wow, you got to subpoena 6 times for doing your job.
Yeah.
That's amazing. About how many death threats did you get when the book came out?
So, like, you know, like, kind of, they were kind of like soft served, you know what I mean? Like, there was probably 2 or 3 that we got on social media. Not too long ago, I got one from a guy who just ripped me apart on Twitter. And so he started messaging me privately. So I started messaging him back, and he, you know, was saying I should be dead, and he hopes something happens to my family. So I just talked to him like a regular adult. I said, look, why are you still hostile towards me? Do I not have the same freedom of speech as you do? Well, of course you do, he said. And I said, why would you threaten a man's family? Do people threaten your family? Well, you're right. I went overboard. And by the time we finished the conversation, the guy's like, well, I guess I should read your book. So, you know.
Yeah, that's the way it usually happens.
Yeah. So, you know, did I really think I was in danger? I tell you what I was more concerned about. I was more concerned about that if she won the election, that they would screw with my pension. And I really thought that was a possibility. That it would somehow, you know, because I retired just before the book came out. I retired about 6 years early. I had 29 years, but I could have worked until this year. But I didn't want to push the envelope. I thought it was unfair to the government in a certain way and to the air marshals and the Secret Service to still be working and release the book. So I retired, and I really rolled the dice, to be honest with you. So.
Well, luckily,
you did very, very well. I must say so.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it did. You know, I'm basically living off my pension, but the first book did very well. The second book is doing good for a history book. I have no complaints, and then most importantly, I have no regrets. I'm telling you, I would do it again. It was the right thing to do. You know, there's an old saying. I'm sure it goes back. It was originally probably written in an Arab language or Hebrew. The truth will set you free. And one of the things, I just wanted to make this point real quick. My friend who helped me, my co-writer, Grant, his father said to me, and I've known this guy for a long time, and we hunt together, and this is how they knew some of this information. You know, we'd be out hunting and, you know, around the campfire having a couple of adult beverages, and somebody would say something, I would tell a story. And he said to me, he said, listen to me, you're very angry. He said, you write this book, this is going to be cathartic for you. This is good therapy. You are angry at the way they treated your coworkers and you are embarrassed that this guy was ever elected. He goes, you don't realize it, but you need to tell the story. And he was right. He was absolutely right. And I'm only half as angry as I used to be. So that's a big improvement.
Right. Gary, that couldn't be any more true, because for me, this radio show and my co-host on the other end of this line, that's my therapy. The listeners know about my issues here at home and Mrs. Stanton driving me up a wall and this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, this is therapy, and it's cheaper therapy.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the Clinton special that came out last month on A&E, were you consulted on that?
No, I was not. I did know it was happening. After the book came out, Linda Tripp got in contact with me. I was doing a speech in Virginia, and I knew Linda Tripp when I worked at the White House. I mean, we weren't good friends, but, you know, we used to see each other. She was very pleasant, and she was very, you know, one of the things that always upset me, and actually this is part of the reason that drove me to tell my story, was the way Linda Tripp was treated. Linda Tripp's one of the few people in that scandal that did the right thing, and they ripped her apart. They attacked her looks, and they attacked her family, and they, you know, and I always felt like she got a raw deal, but she contacted me, and we started messaging each other and texting, and so at some point when they contacted her about doing that documentary, she had told me about it, and so I did know that it was coming, and she actually kind of asked my advice, like what I thought, and I said, listen, you know, you got to do what you think is right, but I would tell you that telling your side of the story was very, I mean, telling my side of the story is very important for me. I think it is for you. So, you know, she went through with it. And I thought the documentary was very good. I think that part of the problem is that, like, from Monica's view, they're trying to play down her role in it. They're trying to make Monica look a little bit more innocent than she really is. You know, as you know, when you read my first book, Crisis of Character, and even the second book, she pursued the president. Now, I know she was a young girl, but listen, I had many run-ins with Monica Lewinsky where I tried to throw her out of the West Wing. She had no business being there. And she was constantly, that's what her whole purpose was, eventually, was to just get in contact with Bill Clinton. And I tried everything I could do to stop her, and eventually I failed, and that's what happened. But I could see exactly what she was doing. I didn't see so much as far as the sexual contact conduct, but I thought what she was just trying to do was climb that ladder. You know, she was an intern and she was looking for a paying job. And she, out of 200 interns, this is the only one they're allowing to do this. You know, so anyway.
Well, yeah, it had the writing all over the wall.
It did.
As they say.
And on the dress.
I talked about how I tried to deny, like at first I didn't want to believe. Like when I knew it was happening, that they were having some kind of sexual relationship, I didn't want to believe it. Like I'm like, oh Christ. Because this will blow up, and it'll blow up right in our face, which it did.
Right. We're done with our third segment with Gary here. And,
yep. Stay tuned. One more segment to go. We'll give it to all Gary. This is 75 Radio, Liberty News Radio.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tified, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
This is 75 Radio with Walter Yuku. I mean, Walter Yurkow. I mean, Walter Kiwi. Here's Walton Scoop.
Thank you, James Edwards. Just another note, folks. This week is the week of Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941, which is a Sunday. I'm sure there's plenty of sailors who retreated early that Saturday night so they can attend services, but never, ever, ever forget. So we remember those 2,000-plus sailors who perished that awful Sunday morning. But, Gary, this is our last segment. We're going to give it to you. Your dime, your dance. Talk about whatever you want. If Walter's got something to say, he'll chime in. Over to you, Gary.
Thank you. So my second book, Secrets of the Secret Service, it started out to be a history book about regicide, the word that means assassinating of a king. And it was going to be all about assassination and starting basically back to the, you know, the original, like, Chinese emperors. And then after about 2 months, you know, doing our research, and we were working at my house one day, and I turned to my co-writer, Grant, and I said, "We're writing the wrong book here." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "You know, I spent 12 years in the Secret Service. And they bombarded us with this, we're the best of what we do, and we're the best of the best, and nobody does it better." And I'm reading all this stuff, and I'm like, if we're the best of what we do, why is John Kennedy, you know, laying in a grave? If we're the best of what we do, how come when Barack Obama was president, three times in one day, they allowed a man that was uncleared, they didn't know he was armed, to get on an elevator with the president three times in one day? You know, they make mistakes, and why do they make these mistakes? And I knew that the answer, what the answers were, just because I had been there. And some of the answers are ego. That's the way we've always done it. And they work their employees into the ground. They work them past capacity. And if any book you've ever written, including Mayan, Dan Bongino, anybody, any former Secret Service agent or employee, the one thing that comes through in every book is the work. They work you to death. They work you beyond, you know, to the point where you can't maintain a marriage anymore, where, all kinds of health issues pop up. So we flipped, and we decided to write this book about the Secret Service. And it was just as cathartic for me in some ways as the first book. I really enjoyed writing. I learned so much about our history, writing Secrets of the Secret Service. And I found it fascinating. One of the things that we discovered was, the Secret Service got its start during the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln hired a guy named Pinkerton, the head of a private security company, to do espionage investigation into the South, and also to fight counterfeiting, because the South was heavily counterfeiting the North's currency. What Lincoln didn't know was that one of his generals hired another private security guy to do the same thing. Well, both of these guys eventually, the name the Secret Service has no real legal basis to it. The Secret Service is no secret, more secret than the Air Marshal Service or the Bureau of Customs and Engraving. But the way they spoke back then, for instance, if I worked for you back then and I was in charge of your horse stable, and nobody knew about it, I was in your Secret Service. So these Pinkerton and this other guy started referring to themselves as the heads or the chiefs of the Secret Service, and it just stuck. And as the organization expanded, and they eventually became permanent, Lincoln actually signed the law making the Secret Service inventing the Secret Service to invest counterfeiting. Actually signed it like the day he was assassinated or the day before he was assassinated. And of course they had nothing to do with protection then, but I just thought it was kind of interesting.
Wow.
Amazing.
Right. Gary, I understand that for people that do work in the White House, Secret Service personnel, aides, Navy stewards, the maintenance people, I understand there's supposed to be, everything that happens in there stays in there. Did you get any flack from your book?
Yeah,
about the Secret Service.
Yeah, I did. So, you know, when I was there, there was no confidentiality agreement. You didn't sign any. But they did, and it's not like they swore you to an oath. You did take an oath, but the oath is to the Constitution and to the office of the presidency. Now, a lot of the stuff that's in my book, other stories that didn't happen exactly to me, or some things that did happen to me, those stories have been told by many other Secret Service employees. And you know, a lot of people have written books, but, for instance, Ed Klein is a famous writer who's written a lot of books about the Clintons. And he gets most of his information has to come from Secret Service employees. But they do it quietly. They don't put their name on it because they don't want to take the risk. I felt like I had to take the risk. I put my name on it. I put my face on it. And I basically dared everybody to call me a liar. Now, some people did. But the truth is they could never stand up and prove that, you know. for instance, one of the first things somebody came out and said was that, you know, David Brock in what's that news media thing he has, basically came out.
Who cares?
who, you know, he never worked in the West Wing. Well, if they'd done their research and went on YouTube, there's actually a video of me working in the West Wing. It's part of a documentary that was made while Bill Clinton was president. These two documentary makers went to the White House to interview George Stephanopoulos, and I was there working that day. And they actually, I'm caught on the videotape working outside the Oval Office, talking to George Stephanopoulos and his assistant, and then you can hear the president in the background. So, you know, everything in my books are true. And as soon as I threatened to drag these people in the court that were calling me a liar, they disappeared pretty quick. So, some of the people I used to work with, they're not happy about what I did. They feel like I breached an oath, so to speak. And the truth is, I did. But I felt like, here's the analogy I use. If you were in the Secret Service and you witnessed, let's just say for the sake of conversation, you know, basically what I'm trying to get, my point is, where do you draw the line? So if what I did wasn't correct, where do you draw the line? If you're protecting a president, and 18 months before he's up for re-election, he's out hunting, and he accidentally drops a rifle, and it goes off. And, you know, 2 days later, you find out 3 miles away, some child was hit with a round. It turned out it was the same caliber. You know that this person accidentally fired this round and hit this person. It's clear to you. And every day you watch on TV, you know, the family, they want to know what happened. Their child's dead. They don't understand. You know, do you keep that to yourself and let it eat your soul, or do you go forward and you do the right thing? And what I did was I went forward and I did the right thing. I realized that the scenario that I used is a little bit more serious, but it's really not when you think about who the Clintons were and are and what they've done. So that's where I fell along.
Wow. Gary, how can people follow you, get in contact with you, buy your books, things of that nature? Because sure. We talked all about the books, but we don't know how to get in contact with you.
Right. You can get in contact with me through my Facebook pages, and I'm on Twitter. I'm author Gary J. Byrne. I'm also on Instagram. And you can find my books on Amazon. It's actually, they're probably both still in some bookstores. They're available on Amazon.com. And I greatly appreciate anybody's interested in it. Thank you.
Right. Well, there should be plenty of interest because I know when I read your book, I was like, hot damn. Well, you got anything else for our wonderful guest today?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, you know, I'm just amazed at what this guy did for 29 years, Gary, and, you know, super job. I mean, you saw
you.
A lot of things, and I'm sure there's a lot of things you're going to take to the grave with you just as the rest of us
do.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It makes amazing talk, you know, not just sitting at a bar having a few beers, but this is just fascinating to me. You know, I was a police officer and so was Scoop, and you know, we got some stories also, but
yeah.
You know, the Secret Service insider is just something else. It's fabulous.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your kind words.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yeah, Gary, we got about 2 minutes left. Anything else you want to say? Some shout outs? I don't know. Any appearances? Any podcasts? Radio shows? Anything? The floor's yours, sir.
I do. Well, I have a YouTube channel, and that can
right.
be found by just
oh yeah,
email. And every interview I've ever done is on that YouTube channel. Radio interviews, some radio interviews, all the TV stuff. Again, if somebody wanted to reach out to me for some information or whatever. They can do that on social media on my Facebook page. I have a personal Facebook page and a book Facebook page, and they can reach out to either one of those. And I just greatly appreciate you guys having me on the show and giving me a chance to tell my story about Secrets of the Secret Service and Crisis of Character. And life goes on. You know, we were talking about earlier about, you know, did I feel, a threat to my life or whatever. And one of the first radio shows I did, and I was doing it from my house just like this, and somebody asked me if I was concerned about my safety, and I said, well, not really, but I let my wife in the morning, and people didn't think that was very funny.
Right. All right, Gary, that's the closing music. We are out of time, but thanks for coming on. I mean, heck, every time we get a guest, it becomes part of this wonderful network. But anyways, check out Gary J. Byrne. This is Peter Scoops with Walter Yerkew on 7-5 Radio. Y'all be safe out there. Have a Merry Christmas. So long, everybody. Take away, Mr. Edwards.
This is James Edwards for 7-5 Radio. For those who work the streets and the jails, thanks for keeping us safe. So long, everybody.